Hey guys, I'm your host, Tara A. Devlin, and welcome to this week's episode of Kowabana, True Japanese Scary Stories from Around the Internet. We have recently updated the Kowabana merchandise store, so head over to kowabana.store to check it out. You can grab shirts, mugs, masks, stickers, hats, and much more, all with exclusive Japanese horror designs. Head over to kowabana.store to check that out. This week, we're looking at the evils that come from within. Stories of the supernatural that don't always necessarily come from the other side, but from those already around us. People sowing what they reap, and people overcoming the odds. Our first story sees a woman out for a drive when she ends up at a strange dead end with an even stranger elderly couple. And it's all downhill from there. Find out why in From the Bottom of the Dam. This is a story I heard from a friend today. She has a strong ability to sense the supernatural. I asked her if anything scary had ever happened to her before regarding all of her ghostly experiences, and this is what she told me. I don't know if I'll be able to properly convey how scary it is secondhand, but it's absolutely the scariest story I've ever heard. This all happened 18 years ago, close to N Dam in the mountains of Wai Prefecture. My friend worked for an electronics retail store, and on this particular day, she went out alone to deliver a TV to an address in T City, Wai Prefecture. Her aunt just happened to live in the same town, and she also had some personal business with her to attend to, so she decided to visit her aunt before delivering the TV, and while there, ask if she happened to know where the address was as well. She found out the customer's address was just a stone's throw away, and she safely delivered the TV and then left to return home. But before she did, she wanted to drop by the adjacent K City, so she asked her aunt again if there was a shortcut to get there. She informed her there was a road that passed behind N Dam, and so she decided to head over that way. It was cloudy and dark that day since lunchtime, but she didn't pay much attention to it as she drove through the mountains. Finally, as she was about to head back down the mountain towards K City, she realized there was nowhere to turn off the road. The asphalt path gave way to an unpaved path and narrowed so that only a single car could fit on it. She was worried that she'd taken a wrong turn somewhere, but at that moment, she noticed an old woman who seemed to be on her way home from some farm work. "Excuse me, is this the road that leads to K City?" she asked the old woman. "No, it doesn't," she answered kindly. "At the end of this road, you'll find a private house. There's a wide open area in front of it, so you can do a U-turn there." She thanked the old woman and drove towards the house she indicated. Before long it came into view, and it was massive. It almost looked out of place way out there in the mountains. In addition to the main building, there was a barn and a storehouse and other such buildings as well. It appeared to be the home of a wealthy old farmer. At any rate, she tried to turn around in front of the house and at that moment, she noticed the same old woman who had just given her the instructions, standing beside the car. She had driven quite a distance, so how was that old lady standing next to her again so quickly? She was creeped out, but she opened her window anyway and thanked her once again for the instructions. "You came all this way, so why don't you come inside and have some tea?" the old woman answered, urging her inside. Reluctantly, she agreed and got out of her car. "Darling, Kyoko-san's back," she yelled once they got inside. In response, an old man appeared.
"Ah, Kyoko-san, welcome back."
She had no idea what was going on. Her name wasn't Kyoko, and it was the first time she'd ever seen this elderly couple. At the same time, she clearly felt a gaze on her coming from somewhere in the house. Surprised, she looked over towards the barn, but of course, she couldn't see inside it. She fought the bad feeling washing over her and followed the old man over to the veranda to sit down.
Kyoko-san, it's so nice to have you home again, the old man said once more as they were sitting.
She thought the man might be a little senile.
No, I'm just passing through. I'm not Kyoko-san, she said, but the old man ignored her.
The very next moment, she lost consciousness, and when she came back to, she was sitting in the family altar room with the old man. She had no idea why she'd blacked out, but the old man was still talking to her.
Everyone else is out during the day, so I'm always alone.
Fighting the horrid feeling washing over her, she asked the old man a question.
Ah, is that so? But isn't there someone out in the barn?
Ah, that's our grandson's girl, but she has tuberculosis, so we keep her out there. She's not allowed in here, the old man said.
Ah, she's recovering, is she? That must be terrible.
The moment she said that, something grabbed her arm tightly. Surprised, she looked down and saw a girl of about 3 holding onto her arm. She had no idea when the girl had entered the room, but the girl just stared at her blankly. Instinctively, she knew something wasn't right with the house, and she tried to escape, but she couldn't move.
Hey, that's not your mother! The old man screamed at the little girl.
The very next moment, she couldn't believe her eyes. The little girl jumped at the old man and bit the back of his neck. The blank look on her face changed in an instant. She bared her fangs like a beast and her eyes glowed red. According to my friend, the girl's face was so frightening that all the hair on her body stood on end. At any rate, she'd reached her limit. She tried to get up so she could escape, but her body still refused to move. When she looked down, she realized that numerous hands were reaching out of the tatami mats and holding her down. But they weren't just grabbing her.
Kyoko-san, you've finally come back to the master.
We won't let you run away again.
Various voices said as the hands held her down. She felt like she was going to pass out again. Then, when she looked at the old man sitting next to her, not only was the little girl that had just been biting his neck gone, but the old man was no longer the old man. He was a man in his 40s instead.
Kyoko-san, we won't let you go again, he grinned, seemingly in agreement with the other voices in the room.
It seemed no matter what, there was no way out of this mess she found herself in. It all ended when that man, who had formerly been the old guy, stood up and grabbed her hand, taking her outside with him. She was unable to resist him, and they walked over to the storehouse and stood before it. She didn't know why, but she was afraid, and when the man opened the door, she saw what was inside. There was a woman lying in an old-fashioned room, like the type she'd seen in historical dramas for confining lunatics.
Who is that?
She nervously asked the man.
Who is that? That's your younger sister, he said, grinning.
She was on the verge of panic and wanted to get out of there as soon as possible. She saw her car was still parked nearby, so she shook the man off and ran over to it. Suddenly, the old woman from earlier appeared in front of the car and placed the remains of a crow on the front windscreen.
Kyoko-san, you're not going anywhere, she said, glaring at her.
Trying not to lose what little sanity she had left, she brushed the crow remains off the car, jumped inside, and then tried starting the engine. As you might expect with a story of this kind, the car didn't start. After several attempts, however, she finally got it going, so she turned around to return down the road that she came from, without looking back. It would be nice for the story to end here, but the spirit trying to possess her wasn't that easy to shake off. Even though she was driving along the same road she had come down,
It somehow got narrower and narrower until it was too small for her to drive along. She was stuck there, wondering what to do, when she saw a red bridge in front of her. The bridge wasn't there when she came down the road the first time. The next moment, the old woman appeared beside her car again.
"I told you you couldn't leave, didn't I? That bridge was built just for you, so you have to cross it," she said through the closed car window.
Making up her mind, she tried to reverse so she could find another way around. But as she was reversing, the old woman stuck herself to the front windscreen, looking down at her from above.
"You can't escape! You can't escape!" she screamed over and over.
Ignoring the old woman screaming on her windscreen, she focused all her energies on turning back, but again, she saw that same red bridge appear in front of her. At that point, she was about ready to give up. It was all over. There was nothing she could do. As though being summoned, she got out of the car and unconsciously started walking towards the bridge. But at that very moment, she heard a voice that seemed to be talking directly inside her head. A voice she recognized from when she was a child. A voice that had helped raise her. Her grandmother.
"You mustn't go that way," the voice said.
And in that moment, she again blacked out. When she came back to, she was driving the car and, before long, she reached the familiar asphalt road again. She had undoubtedly just had a near brush with death and perhaps found herself at the entrance to the other side and somehow broke free. If you've come this far, you might be thinking, this story has to be fake, right? But it was undoubtedly a real experience she had. Plus, that wasn't even the end of the terrifying event. How can I put it? There was another later story that was related to that same dam. That night, after she returned home in a panic, she checked her personal belongings and discovered something important was missing. Her license, which she had on her since the morning, was gone. She went over to the police station right away so she could get a new one reissued. But the unbelievable part comes next. When she arrived at the station, she was lucky enough to discover that her lost license had been turned in. Relieved, she tried to take it back, but when she looked at the photo, she noticed that it wasn't a photo of her face, but rather someone else entirely. Naturally, the police took the license to investigate whether it had been forged or something, but they could find no traces that it had been faked. It appeared to be the real deal. A few days later, she heard from the police that the person in the photo was the daughter of the family she delivered the television to on that fateful day. She died in a traffic accident close to that area where she had the terrifying experience. All of this may sound a little too coincidental, but the old woman who bought the television was the daughter of a wealthy farmer from the area, and when she was young, she didn't get along with her family, so she eloped with her lover and fled the house. She lived in Tokyo for a long time after that, and by pure coincidence, her daughter married a man from the same town that she had been born in. Because she was getting on in years, she returned to her hometown and moved in with her daughter and her new husband. As for Kyoko-san, that was the name of her daughter's child, meaning her granddaughter, who died when she was around the same age as my friend at that time. And that house she found herself in, the ghost house at the end of the road, well, it turned out that it had long ago been submerged at the bottom of the dam. There are even more shocking points, but that was all she told me today. She said she'd tell me the rest next time we meet, so if anyone else wants to hear it, then let me know. At any rate, this is the story I heard today, and I wrote it all down so I won't forget it. It's hard to believe, but apparently there are holes that open up in our daily lives that just happen to casually lead to another world, waiting for us to fall in. Man, I'm so glad I can't see ghosts or anything like that.
Our next story is about a village with a small problem. An elderly woman who lives there isn't quite all there, and she's getting more and more violent as time goes on. They take drastic measures to deal with her, but it soon comes back to bite them in the backside. Find out why in Cabin on the Village Outskirts. This is a story I heard from my grandpa, Jay. In the village where he used to live, there was this crazy old woman. I'll call her Ume. She lived with her son and his wife, but when they built a new house and moved into it, she stayed behind in the village. "I don't want to leave the village I was born in," she said. But according to the other villagers, they left because she was such a burden. From that time on, Ume started to go crazy. When people were having normal conversations with her, she'd suddenly leap forward and bite them on the arm, hard enough to tear the flesh off. "She's probably trying to eat human flesh," people started to whisper after it happened numerous times. "Why don't you tell the police?" Jay asked when he was just a child. "Because it's embarrassing for the village if people discover there's someone crazy here," the adult said, and, on the contrary, they tried to hide her existence from outsiders. Ume never bathed, her hair was a mess, and she always walked around the village barefoot. She smelt bad, and seemed to become less and less human with each passing day. The villagers normally walked around carrying sickles, and if she ever approached them, they'd chase her away with them. "Come any closer and I'll cut you with this." One day, two or three kids were playing when Ume attacked them and ran off with one of the kids' pinky fingers. That kid's parents blew their stack. They went over to Ume's house and beat her repeatedly with a stick. Not a single person tried to stop them. "That asshole, sucking on that kid's finger like it tasted great." In the end, Ume was isolated in a cabin on the outskirts of the village. They surrounded the cabin with rope and iron wire and closed the door with a strong lock. Food was tossed into the cabin once a day, and for the toilet, she had to go on the spot. "When she dies, we should just burn the whole cabin." That was the conclusion that the adults reached. Naturally, the children were warned never to go near the cabin, but one time, Jay went over there with his parents to deliver her some food. As they got closer, a horrific smell wafted out of the cabin. "Ugh, that's disgusting. She's eating her own waste again." They tossed the bag with the rice balls and such through the small window. "Come on, let's go." As they turned their backs to the cabin, they heard a voice call out. "You monsters! You monsters!" A few days later, Jay heard something from his friend. "Hey, did you hear? Apparently that Onibaba is eating her own flesh." That friend had overheard his parents talking. Ume had apparently lost her left arm and right leg at the time. Then one day, both boys snuck over to the hut. Terrifying groans from inside scared them, however, and they quickly ran away. "She's been enchanted by the taste of human flesh. She's no longer human. She's a monster." Jay overheard his parents talking to some neighbors. He asked them about it after, but they wouldn't tell him a thing. "That's not for children to know," they said. That night, various adults gathered at Jay's house to talk about something. "They've got to be talking about that Onibaba," Jay's friend, who came over with his parents, said. The two of them snuck down to the first floor to listen in on the conversation, but they couldn't hear them very well. The only phrase they could catch, said several times, was, "Enough is enough." The next morning at breakfast, Jay's father said, "Jay, you mustn't leave the house today." "Is something going on?" he asked. "There's a ceremony to honour the gods, and children mustn't see it,"
he explained. Jay had no choice but to look outside from the second floor window. In the distance, he could see smoke rising from the cabin.
Dad! Something terrible's happening! There's smoke coming from the Onibaba's cabin!
They're just burning the fields nearby, his father said, and then got angry.
Don't worry yourself with such trivial matters. Go and finish your study.
A few days later, the children were still forbidden to go near the cabin. But one day, he snuck over again with his friend, and when they got there, there was nothing left. A few days after that, Jay, his friend A, and their mutual friend B got together.
I heard from C that the Onibaba's spirit knocks on his door at night, B said.
When Jay got home, he told his father about what he heard.
People sometimes come back after they die. She'll pass on after 49 days have passed, so don't worry about it, he said.
But why is she returning to C's house? Why not her own?
Ume-san is a little different, that's all. She probably just has the wrong house,
his father answered casually. So Jay didn't think much more of it.
But that wasn't the case. It turned out that C's parents had drawn the unlucky straw and were the ones tasked with burning Ume's cabin, and that had brought her vengeance down upon them.
That Ibushi was at their house again. They burnt the cabin down, so she's no doubt angry at them now, the other villagers muttered.
Ibushi was a word Jay had never heard before, but apparently it was a so-called secret word in the village that likely referred to a ghost.
Don't speak to anyone about Ume's ghost, the adults told the children. If you do, then her spirit will appear before them as well. Fearing that, the children never said a word to anyone. The reason the adults used that secret word was so that even if the children did say something, then outsiders would not learn of their shame. Generally speaking, the villagers were desperate to protect their village.
C's family, perhaps exhausted by the visits of Ume's ghost, went over to Jay's house.
Neither we nor the children can sleep. Do we have no choice but to move?
For now, you'll have to abandon the house. At worst, we'll have to tear it down and start again. Until then, you can stay here with us, Jay's father said. And so, both families started living together. As soon as they went back to Jay's room, he asked C,
So, hey, did you really see the Onibaba?
No, but she knocks on the door every night.
Maybe it's just the wind.
I don't know. Lately I've had to sleep with cloth shoved into my ears so I can't hear anything, but then I can't sleep because the lights are on all night.
Hey, did you finish putting out the protections against the Ibushi?
Jay's father asked his mother.
This was a type of charm against evil spirits. They hung dried squid, rice cakes, and fruit from the front door. It was a ceremony they carried out every time someone in the village died.
Every morning when we wake up, that food is gone, C said.
It was probably just a monkey or something, Jay said. But still, he was worried. Now that C's family was staying in their house, he was worried that now the Onibaba might come and visit them instead. That night, C slept soundly next to Jay. He looked funny with cloth sticking out his ears. Downstairs, he could hear the adults talking. He stared at the roof for a while, and before long, heard what sounded like a drum getting hit nearby. At that very same moment, the adults downstairs stopped talking. Jay's fears had been right on the mark. Ume was banging on their front door. Terrified, he shook C awake.
Huh? What?
C said, half asleep. Jay explained what was happening, and together, trembling, they went downstairs to their parents.
They were whispering something to each other.
Dad, Jay said, shaking.
Don't worry about it. Just go to bed, his father quickly replied. Then they all started talking and drinking again like nothing was wrong. The next morning, when Jay and C went outside, the food hanging from the door was gone.
See? Just like I told you, C said.
They went inside to ask their parents about it. We cleaned it up first thing in the morning, they said, and that was that. The knocking continued for a while, but then suddenly stopped.
Ah, 49 days must have passed, Jay thought.
In that village, no graves were made until the 49th day after death. After the body was burnt, the soul was allowed to run free until 49 days had passed. There was a cemetery on the outskirts of town, and the villagers made the graves there. However, they made one in a different location for Ume. There's no way we're going to bury a crazy woman with our ancestors, they said. Jay felt kinda bad for Ume, and the horrible way the villagers treated her even after death, but he was scared of getting yelled at, so he kept his mouth shut. They built Ume's grave on the side of the river. It wasn't so much a grave as two long planks of wood stuck into the ground with no fence around it. It just stuck out like a nail. Plus, because it was built beside the river, there was a good chance that it would wash away as soon as there was some heavy rain. And so it did, not even a month later. Because it was swept away, people soon forgot all about her. It was like the water itself had washed her clean from people's memories. The villagers didn't seem to mind. What were they supposed to do about it? They hadn't done anything wrong. Such cruelty and murder in the name of free acts of God were carried out there like they were the most natural things in the world. One person's existence was wiped from the minds of an entire village because they had no relatives left. The way the adults carried on like this was perfectly natural terrified Jay. What will happen to me if I upset them at some point? He wondered. And that was why, in that village, what the adults said was absolute, and no child ever disobeyed them. They were obedient until the end. Having a unique culture in a closed-off village such as that is terrifying, my grandfather told me. In places like that, common sense isn't common sense. The children grow up brainwashed and become just like their parents. That's why you should make lots of friends, hear their different opinions, and always question whether what you are doing is right or wrong. A young girl at school is bullied, and her tormentor soon disappears. Rumors suggest that the girl had a hand in his disappearance, but what is really going on? Find out in Same Face. I try my best to treat everyone I come across in life equally. It's not that I love people and want to make friends, but more that I don't want to find myself wrapped up in trouble. It's a method of self-preservation, you might say. The story I'm about to tell you now is one that I'll never forget. The person who first made me start thinking that way. From kindergarten all the way up to high school, I was classmates with a girl I'll call A. She lived nearby, so we were kind of like childhood friends, but we weren't really that friendly with each other. A always spent all her time alone. She sat unmoving at her desk even after class ended, and when she did occasionally get up, it was just to go to the windows and stare at the schoolyard outside. One time, I ran into her by chance on the way home from school and stopped to talk to her. You're always alone at school. Don't you get lonely? She said she did, but on the other hand, being with others was troublesome. That was why she didn't approach anyone.
So then, am I annoying you now too? I asked.
It was a bit of a mean-spirited question coming from me of all people, but it was also how I really felt on the inside.
No, one-on-one like this is okay, she said.
After that, we started talking quite a bit, surprising even me, but only on the way home from school. A was so easy to talk to. She was frank with very clear likes and dislikes, but conversations with her never made me feel uncomfortable or put out. On the contrary, they were refreshing. After that, A continued to remain alone at school, but we started returning home together every day. Then, when we were in the second grade of high school, she became the target of bullying. When you're the only one who stands out from the crowd, you tend to become a target. Me and the other kids from our junior high days stood up for her, but it did nothing and the bullying continued to escalate. The worst offender was E, who was especially malicious. We tried to stop him numerous times, but he completely ignored us. We tried talking to A herself as well, but she always just said, "I'm fine." There was no way she was fine. I thought that things would be okay if I returned home with her at the very least, but after we started high school, I no longer saw her outside the school grounds. One day, both A and E suddenly stopped coming to school. A returned after a few days, but E continued to be absent, and then finally, we heard that he'd transferred schools. This news was so sudden that strange rumors quickly started to spread. He didn't really transfer schools. He went nuts and was hospitalized. But that wasn't all. According to the rumors, it was A herself who had cursed him. Because E really had disappeared, people thought the story was plausible and started treating A like they were walking on eggshells around her. The bullying stopped, but now A was even more alone than ever. One day on my way home, I happened upon A and we chatted again. It was just like old times. I decided to take the opportunity to ask her about what really happened to E. "So, about E, I know he always targeted you, but people have been saying that you cursed him. Is that true?"
"It is," she answered without skipping a beat. "He had a huge crush on me, apparently, so I made it that everyone he looked just like me. Seemed that sent him nuts." A laughed, but the smile didn't reach her eyes. I got chills. According to A, her family had a history of being burdened with negative energy and curses, and so, over the years, she'd learned how to do it as well. But, like, how was I supposed to believe that? Curses? Did such a thing even really exist? "That's why you shouldn't get involved with me anymore," she said. "See ya. Bye-bye." As she walked away, tears streamed down her face. We graduated high school shortly thereafter, and A moved away. The house she lived in was sold and demolished, but the buyer never did anything with the land. According to my parents, because there's something wrong with it, it'll probably remain an empty lot for a while to come yet. Even now, I still think about what those tears meant the last time I saw her. I think that maybe she really did want to be friends with everyone, but circumstances made that impossible for her. I hope that, at the very least, she's living her best life now. That's all I can do. Unable to put up with an abusive work environment anymore, a young woman decides to end it all. But when she arrives at the location of her choosing, It seems things aren't going to go according to plan. Find out why in The Thing That Saved Me. A while back, I was being harassed in the workplace and had no one to talk to. The days passed in a haze. This is just what work is, I tried to tell myself in order to find a solution for it all. But it was a tightrope act and it only took a moment to fall off. One day, something inside me suddenly broke, like a string had snapped and inside I went blank. I have no idea how I got back home that day. Once I did, I went to speak to my parents about what was going on. Work is about endurance. There is meaning in sticking it out. Quitting was running away, and running away was shameful. That was how my parents felt, and rather than listening to me, they just pressed me to continue. It was bedtime, but I couldn't sleep. I got up and was overwhelmed with a single thought. Maybe I should just die. Yeah, that would be great. Thinking about ending it all, I felt oddly at ease. But how to do it was the important part. After much internal debate, I decided I would jump into the nearby dam. Unable to contain myself, I jumped in the car right away and started driving towards it. The dam was an hour drive from my house. There were no lights on the mountain road, and I was the only one out there. I drove in silence, with the radio turned off. I was a scaredy cat who didn't like driving, so looking back on it now, it was completely unlike me. I just wasn't feeling anything at the time. I was so stressed that my mind wasn't working correctly anymore. Before long, the dam came into view. I stopped in the parking lot and made straight for the water without hesitation. I stood on the bridge and looked down at the darkness spreading out before me. That darkness would end it all, and I longed for it. I gripped the side of the bridge and was about to jump over when something grabbed the neck of my parka and pulled me back. Shocked, I looked around, but I couldn't see anyone there but me in the moonlight. Huh? I touched the back of my neck, and it was cold, like ice. I instantly returned to my senses and ran all the way back to the car, trembling. Somehow, I was able to make it back safely. I dove into bed, and next thing I knew, it was morning. A few days later, I pondered what happened that night. Someone had saved me that night, but who? If they hadn't pulled me back, I 100% would have died. I quit work after that and things calmed down. I later learnt that that dam was haunted, and even though I'm still terrified of ghosts, recently I've started to feel a little less afraid of them. Don't mess with snakes. That should be a given, but here's another reminder of why you should respect nature and all of her creatures. This one's called Curse of the Snake. I heard this story from my father. When he was a junior high student, there was a spirit medium or someone like that who lived nearby. This medium was apparently rather famous and people came from all around to see them. As for the locals, there were some people who believed the medium was the real deal, while others found them to be mighty suspicious. One day, a woman who lived nearby came running into my father's house, crying. "My husband's gone mad! Please help me!" Surprised, my grandfather ran over to her house to check things out, my grandmother in tow. When they got there, the husband was screaming while sprinkling a bottle of sake all over the house. The old woman who lived with them was crying and trying to stop him. Yet he shook her off and continued sprinkling alcohol in front of the house. I later heard that the only son of that household had long been laid up in bed with a mystery illness, and so the husband had gone to visit the spirit medium about it.
"It's the curse of the snake," the medium said. "Long ago, a man who lived near that house killed a snake. The seal has broken, and once again it has appeared on your land. Your son is around the same age that man was, and so it has possessed him."
And so, in order to break the curse, the medium told him that he must sprinkle the snake's beloved sake all around the house while chanting to it. Once he started, he wasn't allowed to speak anything other than the chant until all the sake was gone. And the husband did just that. The next day, the son woke up. However, a few days later, the son of another household nearby suddenly fell ill. The husband told the man of that house about his visit to the medium, but that man didn't believe in that nonsense and refused to go, taking his son to the hospital instead. Before long, his son passed away. Well, it might have been nothing more than a coincidence, but either way, it was still a strange story. How well do you know your co-workers? Do you really know what they get up to outside of work time? Or even during work time? The man in this next story soon realizes he doesn't know his co-worker very well at all, and what they uncover about him shocks them all. Find out why in Secretive Essan. There's a person by the name of Essan, alias, at my workplace. Or rather, there was. Several shocking events occurred, so let me tell you about them. Essan started work there roughly 3 years before me, and should have been in a position to be trusted to work alone by that point. However, day after day, the senior colleagues got angry at him for something or another, and even though I was the new guy, they'd never once gotten angry at me like that. I felt bad for him, and I wanted to stick up for him. By the time I'd gotten used to work and become another cog in the wheel, able to help things move along, I finally learnt why people always got so angry at him. Essan never once passed on vital information to the company. The progress of his work, the happenings inside the company, even invoices and important things from other companies, all of it. Whatever reached Essan stayed with Essan. I realized that our company received a lot of letters from lawyers, and the reason for that was because Essan never passed on the invoices he received from them. They were all letters requesting payment for overdue bills. So understandably, the higher-ups always got angry at him. But all Essan would say was, "Sorry." And honestly didn't look to be very sorry at all. This kept happening over and over. When customers requested that Essan make payment for an urgent matter, he would brush it off as not his problem. "Huh? But I could have sworn I told the woman from accounting to do it. I'll go tell her again." Even though it was clearly his fault. On the other hand, as someone who had been working at the company longer than us, he often came over to talk to us newer workers. Just by talking to him, he seemed like a competent employee. His manner of speaking certainly made him seem that way, anyway. But thinking back on it now, that's probably one of the traits of a psychopath. But then one day, Essan suddenly disappeared. He vanished without a trace, leaving behind everything but his cell phone. All of the work he had been entrusted with stopped, and the company received a barrage of complaints. They continued to search for him while dealing with the mess he left behind, and it turned out he'd gone back to his family home. His company phone was confiscated as punishment for his disappearance, but this is where it really gets wild. Essan had a son in junior high school with his ex-wife, but he wasn't paying any child support for the boy. And on top of that,
he listed numerous entertainment expenses in his dealings with various customers, but it turned out he was actually stealing that money and spending the night on the town by himself. We were shocked to find photos on his business phone of S-san dressed up in costume with numerous girls. And it seemed that, on top of all that, he was also running a drinking establishment on the side. But what was most surprising of all was that he had a secret child. That child was also a boy in junior high, conceived around the same time he got married. Yet he pretended to be a good father to the boy, and there were numerous emails of thanks in his phone, with messages like, "Thanks for everything, Dad. You always work so hard." He'd never once acted like a father to his legitimate son. Even S-san's family were astonished. When S-san disappeared back to his family home, it was apparently under the pretense that he was being harassed at work, but that was soon exposed as a lie as well. Thanks to S-san, I realized that people just like him really do exist, and just as we'd about finished cleaning up his last mess, he disappeared again. This time, for good. I have one more story to share, something quite horrifying. Apparently, S-san's son, the one with his ex-wife, sent him a photo he took when he was hanging out with some friends. Everyone at work went into an uproar when they saw it, so I asked them to show me the photo as well. His son was standing in front of a building wall. He was alone, nobody else in the photo. But even so, his son appeared to have an extra arm. It was the first time I'd ever seen a ghost photo for real, and I couldn't stop trembling. It made me feel like maybe there were other things that S-san was still hiding from us. Don't forget to check out Toshiden Volume 3, available on Amazon right now, and our newly revamped merchandise store at koobana.store. And if you'd like to chat about this week's stories, come and join us in the Koobana Discord. You can find that link in the description or on koobana.net. You can also check out our Patreon at patreon.com/TaraA.Devlin for exclusive bonus stories and extras, or our YouTube channel at youtube.com/KoobanaJapan for all sorts of Japanese horror you won't find anywhere else. Thanks, guys. Stay safe, and I'll see you again next time for even more Koobana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet. Want even more scary stories? Head over to koobana.net for new translations every week. You can also join our Patreon for exclusive stories you won't find anywhere else. Head over to koobana.net now.